I watched Benny Hinn this morning. I can't believe that he's using all the scriptures that applied to Christ in the Old Testament, in the Psalms and Isaiah, etc. He's using them as the way you fight demons. It just makes me crazy.
Faith in combat.
Huh?
Faith in combat.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know it was a series. I tried to listen to it, but I got so mad I had to turn it off. Yes, I'm not going to do that anymore.
I'm sitting there all day long from over in the side. I hear laughter, disembodied laughter.
What's Ronnie doing?
Laughing all day long. Sometimes uproarious.
We are continuing to study the Great Transgression. Remember, it's from Psalm. I'm going to just read it. You don't have to go there. It's from Psalm 19, the 12th, 13th, and 14th verses. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Obviously, you don't meditate in your heart. You meditate in your mind. And so there's something about having the words of your mouth and the meditation of your heart being acceptable. It has something to do with the great transgression and secret faults and presumptuous sins. And so we're going to continue from what we studied yesterday. Remember, we talked about the total and complete fear and anxiety of a child, of an infant. And as that infant grows, it automatically moves toward well-being and avoids pain. And that constant moving toward well-being and avoiding pain becomes the mold that produces your I or your ego. And then when self-awareness enters the picture around 18 months, then it completes it. It makes you totally aware that you are alone and isolated and separate, and you need some contact, something to cause you to have the sense of well-being. As I said yesterday, the sound, for instance, the sound mom or mommy brings warm body and a voice which seemed to be lost. When you lose that voice or that presence that produces anxiety and rage, the Chinese for many years have believed that when left alone, if a baby begins to smile, he's finally a person. The smile reveals a sense of self and feeling of well-being and intactness. Now, what happens when you feel the sense of separation or aloneness or abandonment and that rage and everything it produces, as your mind develops, you begin to populate your world with magic in order to create a spell or a reality that keeps you away from that aloneness. This drive to keep away from that, remember what I said yesterday, it's not aloneness per se, it's aloneness or abandonment or separation from something that you think is important. And that creates the drive that defines ambition in the world. Now, that's as you continue with that, those techniques, you learn these devices that makes you forget about being alone and abandoned and separate. There's a jillion of them. I don't have to go into all those. But the sense of separate existence can be tolerated as long as immediate satisfaction enables the child to control his fears. And he controls his fears with magic and image formation and this whole process then of it's before the words come, it's done with imagery. When the words start coming, when you begin to agree with the conspiratorial societal alliance that a bunch of grunts and groans mean something, then you begin to develop words. And so then once you develop words, then your mind talk begins. Now all of this are the secret fears, presumptuous errors. That's what begins the process, because it's all a result of the fall, of being separate from the awareness of God. Now, this magic and image formation are the tools that you have to fight against rage and disillusionment and separation. And they serve as a defense mechanism against anxiety. These are the instruments. These become the instruments of your definition of self. I can't remember all the way back, but I remember that I've told you the story before about the guy I went to part of grade school and high school with. He started the Vietnam War. Mark Frick. Well, Mark Frick and I used to fight every single day. I don't know how long. It seemed like it was every day of my life, but it was. And it was after school. He always beat me up. But the moment, I mean, he didn't kill me, obviously, but he didn't hurt me very bad. But it was just I couldn't stand the fact that he could beat me up. That's all right. Let's leave it. And so what I would do, I would replay the fight in my mind, and I would create the situations and what I would do when he did certain things so that it would be assured that I would win. Well, he must have been plugged into my dreams or my imaginations, because he always overcame them.
In the dream?
No, not in a dream. It was in the reality of imagining my revenge. Now, I'm probably the only one that ever did anything like this. But the problem is that some of you still do it. Right, Harry?
Yep.
Harry has beat me up so many times in his mind that I should be just totally wasted. I'm sure others have also. Now, as I said earlier about the Chinese, but some societies insist that the child should not ever be separated from its mother or left alone for any reason for several years. In our culture, and in the Western cultures, the child is left alone at infancy and left to cry for hours. Well, you can't imagine the strength of the magic that creates in people. The strength of the mind talk. Because that was its only defense against being totally and completely alone. And so the more you were neglected, or the more you had perceived neglect, then the stronger the mind talk, the more powerful the magic. Otherwise, you wouldn't be alive. Everybody understand me? Now, all of these, we'll get to it in a minute if we have time. All of these produce what was talked about in Ezekiel about what the evil that's on the walls of our temple. But regardless of any cultural differences, anxiety and desperation are the most important part of the development of your I or your ego. It's the negatives of anxiety and separation and fear that have produced who you are. Does that, anybody want to argue with that? What? Not at this time? The child starts populating his universe with protecting gods and fairies. Well, maybe not fairies. And protection from malevolent spirits. Their imagined existence evokes terror and fear, and thereby polarizing good and evil. And also pollution and purification. Every one of you had rites of purification that you went through to cleanse you. So, I mean, you were religious from the very start. The only problem is it was totally and completely pagan from anybody's definition as that small child. As you grew in this society, which didn't give breath to any of that, any animism or anything, then it has become more sophisticated, but no less evil. Now, the protection takes the form of magical imagery, mystical beliefs, ancestral worship, augury, sorcery, spell weaving, casting spells on people, imagining that you're invisible. I mean, they're endless of what happens. All these are evoked by the inevitable experience of childhood desperation and helplessness. And they lie in the nature of human growth, and they are the heart of sin and the heart of the great transgression. Because you haven't forgotten them, they're still there. If a particular child has it rough without touch or embrace, the magic is more potent if he is to survive. Otherwise, he is faced with the dread of being left out and helplessly alone. This is also true when the demands of the parent figure are so completely demanding or so completely authoritarian that it's the same as the child that's been left alone. I saw a program a while back on television where a child that was six wet the bed, and his father's punishment for it was to set him on the hot radiator and hold him there until his buttocks were burned and scarred. The thing that defined a great part of me in those early years, and I didn't remember this for many, many years until we started the list stuff and tried to remember these things, was when I was six or seven, something like that, I developed whooping cough and double pneumonia at the same time in the Minnesota cold. And when you have whooping cough, you lose control of your bowel movements. And so my father would make fun of me to his friends in public, saying this, however old I was, he's still crapping in his pants. And I had forgotten the dread of that and the shame of that. But I still cannot stand flatulence jokes I think they're, you know, I rationalize it in my mind, but I think they're unseemly or something, you know. But it's because of it was that definition from way back many years ago. And so, therefore, I judge any flatulence jokes, or even they use when you see the word fart in comic routines or something, I cringe inside. That's bad. Well, it's not bad or good. It's just a word. But that had defined that part of me. Now, and there's many others in each one of us that have defined what you think is good or bad. They are the fruit. This idolatry is the fruit of the great transgression. I'm sure that Harry's father, probably his father, not his mother, she didn't care. But I'm sure in Harry's case, with regard to how everything has to have its place and it's just the right thing, is because his father was so demanding. And it created what Harry is convinced is the right thing, that everything has to be in place. And yet, you know, nobody really cares. But now, and again, I thought about what you said yesterday, you've rationalized it to be a a group thing, that it's an agreement. But it's still a rationalization. Is this interesting to anybody? Okay, this process of desperation has a two-pronged effect. It's a gnawing resentment and aggressive retaliatory feelings on the one hand, and then a sense of guilt because you have those feelings. This inner drama starts in the earliest childhood and defines and gives figure to the stick figure I. Now, normally this drama has its star as the mother, because she can't possibly meet the unending demands of the child. She is transformed into a terrifying stepmother, the witch, the ogre, whenever she doesn't meet or be the need-satisfying machine the child to man demands as his rightful possession. And that's the source of, in every culture, there's this ogre. A great example of it is the mother goddess Kali in Hindu, wears girdles of human skulls, which she drinks blood of her own children, But she's also worshipped as Devi, and described as beautiful, benevolent, and generously giving. And that dichotomy of no matter who your mother is and how good she was is always there. Now, it can be whoever the primary parental figure is, but most families had a mother and a father, and so in our society we had the evil witch. But all these, you just think they're fairy tales, but fairy tales couldn't exist unless they had a universal tie or receptor in each person's brain. That's why Disney became so successful, because he tied into that in the cartoon characters. Now, society relies on and exploits this separation anxiety as a means for inhibition, for control, and for commerce. Think of the ads. Oh, you don't have to think very hard. They're all based on it, that you will be happy and wonderful if you get this product. Chrysler has even gone to the Chrysler is love. Yeah. Drive is love. And they have Celine Dion, or whatever her name is, singing these, you know, they're really haunting songs that tie in with it. But every ad, all commerce. I saw on History Channel yesterday the history of advertising. My God, it started rather late, but it has exploded since then. Now, and all of us, built-in terror restrains our willfulness, our hostility and malicious impulses. Criminals are the ones who can't restrain it. Unless you're just a sociopath. And I won't go into that. They operate as a first sign in censorship and character formation. a condition which relies on magic and animism, protect yourself from intolerable and unacceptable instinctual temptations. Anxiety triggers panic, leading to imagery, which aim is to muzzle the inner tormentor. I got to use Buckner as an example. Gary was a short, skinny little kid that was probably thought people made fun of him. And that torment drove him to become an incredible athlete, to just miss being on the 1964 Olympic team. He only missed it because he was sick. But do you see how that torment is the source of ambition? So first of all, you have to accept this as a premise, that every idea, every improvement, every invention of man since the cross is an attempt to flee the revelation of Christ. If you can accept that, then you can understand that this tormentor, this fruit of the great transgression, is the source of all ambition. The stronger the torment, the greater the ambition. Do you ever wonder why so many very small, very short men are supremely successful? And yet after they get supremely successful, they're still as much of an idiot and insecure as they were ever?
They're still short.
They're still short. Well, I know a lot of them. I mean, this stuff to me is fascinating because it explains how we develop our rights and wrongs, our good and evil. Are idolatry. But at the same time, you feel guilty about all this. And that's the basis for formation of human morality, religion. It's the determining factor for the organization of human society. Well, that's why Christianity isn't religion. Christianity is a new creation, a new race. Because there is no possibility of improving these conditions in the human being. He is lost and helpless forever.
There's also no possibility. Everything you've been saying is kind of like the whole foundation and platform of I know my life and everyone else. However,
except me.
Except, yeah.
Yeah. God, I'm the worst of all.
Yeah. But here it all is, and I've been wondering, well, where's he going with this? But this isn't something that, because we become believers now, we're going to correct all of these.
God isn't going to correct those things.
Yeah. You can't correct them.
That's right. That's why his own arm has gotten him the victory. His own seed has gotten him the victory. That's why the only hope for us is to die to self and give no credence to our thoughts or our emotions. And that's a time-consuming process.
Yeah, and that's why this is important, because until we see this, we subconsciously get credence.
Right. Well, human character and beliefs were not created in ancient times. They're created in each one of us, because every one of us goes through this process. That's why the Bible is written like it is. Because starting with the book of Genesis, and all the way through the cross, really, it shows that, you know, all of us are screwed up. I mean, that's why I get such a kick out of these right-wing Christians that talk about family values. I mean, the Bible has the worst history of family values of any book I've ever heard of. It has incest, it has killing of children, it has eating of children, it has And this is what this was by the chosen race. It has murder, it has mass murder, it has serial killers, it has every kind of, it has child molesters, it has every kind of evil that you can conceive of as the basis for the alleged family values. The only family of the only family values is the church. The only place of family values is the church. But so it's this whole business of human character was formed in the step-by-step development of your own individual and immensely varied encounters of his own childhood. This is true for every person that has ever been born. Man can, and again, this is really, you understand, this is really what psychiatrists and psychologists call infantilism. And the human race is plagued. There's been a pandemic or epidemic of infantilism in the human race. Yet we've learned to suppress it because of, you know, all of the things that I've just been talking about. It's because this child, this infant within you, its incessant needs and demands must be cut off in order for there can be any. That's why the idea that gain is godliness is so incredibly evil, because it simply then puts God's imprimatur on greed. Without the cross, the infant in all of us cannot go beyond the moment of birth. And the relinquishment of the symbiotic causes a critical sense of abandonment and terror. The persecution fears that, and the ghosts and the spirits all tell us about it. So this isn't like, no, let's look at it. Let's go to Ezekiel 8 real quick. Verse 7, he brought me to the door of the court. And remember, he's talking about the court of the temple. And this is why it's so critical that you must understand that you are the temple of God. And the Spirit of God brought him to the door of the court. And when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. Then he said unto me, Son of man, dig now into the wall. Every time you've seen a hole in the wall before this, you've covered it over with untempered mortar so that you wouldn't see the hole. Every time there was weakness in the wall of the court here, you tried to cover it over. Oh, God. Then he said unto me, Son of man, dig now in the wall. And when I had digged in the wall, behold, a door. And he said unto me, Go in and behold the wicked abominations that they do here. And this is what we're doing in the holy place. In us, as the temple. So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beast and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed upon the wall round about. And there stood before them 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel, and in the midst of them stood Jazaniah, the son of Saphan, with every man his censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. Then he said unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark, every man in the chambers of his imagery? For they say, The Lord seeth us not, the Lord has forsaken the earth. And it goes on. But that 70, this is the basis for the beast that John saw coming out of the ocean. It's this one, it's this. The 70, the Sanhedrin of you as the temple, the phony cell Sanhedrin, and that's all the voices that you pay attention to. They're the Sanhedrin of the Antichrist. That's why the only answer is to accept your death. The only answer is to know that you're not a debtor at all to any thought, to any idea, to any emotion. That's why you must bring every single thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Because every one of those thoughts is based on the great transgression. And it's just getting old. It's stupid. Well, there's more, but we'll continue tomorrow. Anybody have any response? People want, by the way, every one of us is just like, you know, I'm not going to dig in that wall. I'm going to fix the wall so I don't have to look in there. I want to believe like the Babylonians do, that I can put God's name in all this and be fine. No. The garment cannot be spotted by the flesh, and the garment is the righteousness of Christ. Harry came to me yesterday and said that something had been bothering him for 3 weeks. I said, you've got to learn that that can't take place. If something bothers you for 1 second, it has to be resolved. It has to be taken care of, given away. And he rationalized it by saying, well, it's not the time. Now is the time. Well, if anything has been bothering you for 3 weeks, what would happen? The garment has touched the flesh. There's a spot on the garment. There's a spot on the righteousness of Christ, which is your garment, the pure white garment, because He is the way. And He is, that's why it says we must put Him on. Please, there must be zeal in revenging the disobedience of this evil one. Not rationalize it. And the zeal has to be instant. Now Harry's mad at me again. He spends his life mad at me. No, he's not mad. I'm just kidding. Anybody want to respond or expand it? Did it touch anybody? I'm sure. I mean, my God, you got to have some response.
I saw this link between getting really mad at computer programs that don't work and a real early experience of screaming for my mother and it not working.
Well, I mean, this explains what it explains is our own evilness that isn't fixable. That's why we must die daily. It doesn't mean once a day. It means it's a continuum. We are offered as sheep to the slaughter.
You know, there's a great big motor in us somehow that it doesn't say it's not fixable. That motor says it's fixable. Every day you forget, yesterday you realize it wasn't fixable.
Yeah, that motor is the Antichrist.
Yeah. That's the big revelation.
And well, you got to see it even more personally. That motor is you.
Yeah.
Your you-ness.
Yeah. It's just the way we're made.
Did I make John mad?
Please are ready to adopt.
I'm just kidding. I need that.
Went over the line this morning.
I stopped preaching and started meddling.
Yeah, he's doing good.
He's
preaching. Yeah, I couldn't take it. I didn't let it short. Crap. I was seeing how much I did imagine. Still, even after being here so long.
I mean, it's you doing it in all these stupid things. You know, the scripture is clear. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad therein it. Okay, so we take that. First of all, we take that and we say that's going to be someday, or that's going to be if it goes good. But it is a whole bunch of days. It is the one day from the evening of the cross, waiting until He returns. There is only one day, the last day. And Christ Himself is that Sabbath. And we're waiting for the eighth, which is the resurrection scene.
You know, when I was going to this one of these little homeless places down there, that was the song that we sung before we ate breakfast. And, you know, this is the day that the Lord has made.
Well, you can use that. You can use the word as sorcery. Now you can be glad no matter what happens. Now you can rejoice no matter what's taking place. I pray.
I was thinking what an incredibly fertile business religion is, because it's got, I mean, you covered a pretty broad landscape of the makeup of humanity, and they can look at just any part of it and work it.
Well, again, but they...
Yeah,
they don't know they're doing that.
No, they don't, but it doesn't matter that they don't.
But it's a natural outcome of the fall.
Yeah. And they're doing it in God's name and think they're doing wonderful things.
Yeah,
they'll never run out of material.
No, that's why it's woe unto the preachers or the shepherds that are eating the sheep instead of feeding them.
Yeah.
Woe unto those that don't preach the cross. Not about the cross, your death, my death. Consider these things. Everybody understand perfectly?
I was thinking about all the counseling sessions I've been to that were validating the needs of the young infant Kevin. And that was the root of my problem.
Yeah. Nurture the inner child.
Yeah.
I don't say nurture the kill the son of a bitch.
You'll make people mad
all the time. In some circles, if you're not
going away. I know.
I had a fart joke, I wasn't sure, but I won't do it.
Kevin is evil. Pete, yeah, it was Pete, the, what do you call it? No, the guy that has makes the puppet speak. Ventriloquist. All righty, take it, big guy.